And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
With the playoffs in full swing, you don't want to miss a single episode of the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network every single Monday with myself, Zach Harper, and our cast of characters, Trevon Edwards, Jay King, Dave DeFore, James Edward III, Law Murray. We're breaking down every single big playoff story, and we're doing it with a lot of fun and a lot of trash talk. Make sure you're checking it out. The Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show every single Monday morning, right in your podcast face.
I just got something on my phone. Oh, it's a fraud alert. Ben Simmons and the Philadelphia 76ers. Fraud alert. My bank is contacting me saying don't invest in these bums ever again.
Hey, everyone. This is Andrew Schlecht.
And I am Alex Spears.
And you can join us every Saturday on the Athletic NBA Show for the Saturday Slam and Jam.
We will bring you the most interesting plots and storylines from the playoffs, fun guests, and a weekly trivia show where I attempt to completely embarrass my co-host, Andrew.
So grab your coffee, do your chores, and turn up the Saturday Slam and Jam right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on the Athletic Podcast Network. This is Nerdish She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. We're a little bit late, but it's still Nerdish She Wrote. I'm Dave. Seth and Mo are here. We're going to jump right in, because again, getting a little bit of a late start, but we wanted to see Bucks Hawks last night before we recorded, and the Bucks are now up 3-2 as we record this Friday morning. Giannis missed game five. We all saw the hyperextension of the knee. Trae Young out again in game five, and guys, the Bucks looked really, really good. And in particular, I thought that aggressive switching defensive scheme was a bit of a revelation, because we just haven't seen it from the Bucks. Like, we've all thought that they could do it, and now we know that they can. Weird.
I think it wasn't just the switching scheme. I think it was, well, that was something. It was just the level of aggression that they had defensively, where, especially in the first quarter, I was at this game last night, and Atlanta was, I don't want to say shook, but they were shook. The Bucks were picking them up at half court. They were bumping them off their cuts. Atlanta was starting every possession in the first quarter, it seemed like, with 11 seconds on the shot clock, 35 feet from the basket. And you're just not going to run good offense if that's kind of the situation you find yourself in.
I mean, this was the aggression the Bucks needed in game four. Like, this was exactly how they needed to come out with game four, with the opportunity going, hey, we can really take a hold of this series. And they came out kind of flat, and the Hawks came out ready to fight. In this one, it was the other way around. And I think part of it was, you know, as Seth said, you know, the Hawks were like, oh, they're going to play tonight. And it was a couple things to it, too. Like, I think the idea – it's something with star players. I don't think people understand when a guy gets injured, you know, and has to miss the rest of the game, the teams, it's tough to adjust in that whole instance. Going into the next game, knowing that that guy is not going to be there, whole different game plan, you know, for how they're going to attack and things like that. So I think that played a role in that as well. I think they were just more fired up and ready to go. I hate to say that the analysis to me was just, hey, the Bucks played harder. But to me, it was really just like, yo, the Bucks showed up and played harder than they did in game four.
Well, Mo, we did the ding after game four, and that was our initial reaction before we even got to Giannis getting hurt and being out. Was it just felt like the Bucks didn't even show up to play until after Giannis got hurt. And even then, they were kind of they looked a little scared, like we talked about. And so it was nice to see them just come out and be aggressive and be dominant. But the bigger thing was game five was a reminder of how freaking big the Bucks are, but also how versatile. Look, Brook Lopez had a 2021 Shaquille O'Neal game in this game. I mean, he took two threes. I mean, when was the last time that Brook only attempted two threes in a game? It's probably been a while. And he had a 30-point game just by playing big. And it makes you think, why don't the Bucks do this more often when they have this sort of size advantage? You know, the Hawks just are too small for the Bucks if they play large like that. And I know that that seems like sounds simple to do and is probably harder in practice, but I mean, we just saw it. It worked pretty well.
What really happened was, just in terms of who's using what space on the floor, Brooks sort of moved into the Giannis space and Bobby Portis filled in behind him. And you know, Brook obviously got to spots on the floor in a different way than Giannis does. It was much more, it's really almost much more the way we would like to see the Bucks play, because the Bucks wore Atlanta out with the Middleton Lopez pick and roll, just like completely wore him out. Whether it was, you know, hitting Lopez on the roll, whether you know, Middleton, because he's such a patient player, you know, had kind of delay dribble, kind of slow-mo layup to the basket, or he was, you know, slinging passes to the opposite side of the floor. And for a lot of the game, it felt like the Bucks should be up more, because as has been a theme frequently throughout this playoffs, the Bucks couldn't shoot from three, despite getting pretty good looks off of that and other actions.
Yeah, but it's all but it's also harder with when Giannis is on the court, you know, like that whole thing. Like everybody was talking about it, like, oh my God, look at all this space. Like, yeah, but also, you know, if you have Giannis, you're going to play Giannis, and you can't play him and have him space, you know, and things like that. It's kind of similar, not the same, but similar to the problem the Sixers have in terms of spacing from time to time. You know, it's I think ideally you'd want to be able to run that Lopez Middleton pick and roll. Now, maybe this is more of a case of like, hey, this is probably a lineup we should go to when we have Giannis and give Giannis rest. And then we can go and start to play this way a little bit more. I think it's along those lines and things like that. But Lopez was great. I thought Drew Holiday was great. Finished with, what, 8 assists, was diming guys up. You know, it was funny looking at this game. It was a Brook Lopez game. It was a Chris Middleton game. It was a Drew Holiday game. And it was a Bobby Portis game, all wrapped in one. And I think that was probably a bit surprising.
You know, Drew Holiday, I think, had 12 or 13 assists, and Middleton had 8 assists. But I think that it's a good point to make, though, the number of assists those guys in particular had, but also the way that the offense just looked better running through those guys instead of Giannis. And I wonder if going forward, they don't just take a look at that and say, hey, you know, maybe Giannis is like the roll man, the vertical spacer, hanging out in the dunker spot is a better place for him, and he can be ultra elite at that stuff. And we've got these guys that are a little bit better at playmaking off the dribble than him. And maybe we could have a better, easier offense. I don't know, Seth. Maybe I'm just
short
crazy.
Version of why they don't do that is Giannis doesn't want to play that way. Like,
you know, sure,
a star has the ball in his hands at the top of the floor. Ergo, which is, you know,
yeah,
it's not the first case where someone has, you know, gotten the idea of how they should play kind of exogenously, rather than, no, this would just be really awesome and we would crush everyone with this one neat trick. But that's what it is. I want to get back to Holiday. He had a really interesting game, I thought. Midway through, like end of the third quarter, I think I tweeted out, he's got 20 and 10 in it, and he's kind of just played okay. First quarter, he was like, anyone up to and possibly including John Collins, too small, and just like bowled his way to the basket, and he was getting layups. He hit Lopez for, I think, about 3 dunks on Wade cuts. And then he just kind of stopped doing that for much of the rest of the game. And that's sort of been a frustrating thing about the Bucks all this postseason, is they find a thing that works and it's like, okay, that we're good. Well, we know we can do that. Let's explore something else. Whereas the playoffs are oh, that worked? Well, here, again. Run it again. Run it again.
Yeah. Yeah, every problem is a nail, right? Like, until it's not, and then you adjust. And I actually felt the same way. So I didn't get it because they got everything they wanted inside. Like, what causes teams to go away from what's working?
Multiple things. I think some of the stuff that tends to happen is, you know, they sub him out. He comes back in, you know, different group of guys on the court, different sort of thing. A little bit tired.
I think that's a big
you know,
one.
A little he plays 42 minutes. I mean, he expended a lot of that in the first quarter, a lot of that energy and that explosion. I think some of that plays a role into this. And then other guys were going, you know, and it wasn't, again, all those four guys, you know, it was all attacking in a little bit different ways, you know, besides the few dunks that Lopez got off of Holiday's drives, you know, a lot of that stuff was out of the pick and roll with Middleton. You know, it was playing, they had different ways they went to. And I think that kind of attributes that a little bit in this game, because I'm with you guys. And I think this has been a theme, not just of the Bucks, but really the whole playoffs. You know, when we looked at it, a lot of teams have stopped being who they were for a lot of times. And we're always looking at it going like, no, what are you doing? This isn't
run your stuff.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Just run your stuff. And even to the Hawks, you know, I thought their offense to start the game, even though the defense was in them, I also felt like they went matchup hunting way too many times to start the game. And we're trying to get attack Lopez, and he was solid defensively on the guards in this game. But I felt like, you know what, you can get to that anytime. Run some offense, you know, especially, you know, try to run some actions and then get to that. It was just literally like, okay, let's match up, hunt, and go. And I felt like that took those guys out of their system.
As much as we like Kevin Huerter, and I think we all like Kevin Huerter, I don't think an offense saying, oh, Kevin Huerter, get to your bag and shoot step back jumpers over a 7-footer. I don't think that's a recipe for. Like, if your offense ends up there after exploring other things, that's fine. If your offense starts there, it's
good luck.
And that was what the Bucks came out switching 1 through 5, and you could see it on the first play of the game. Like, Lopez switches out on Huerter, and it's just like, ooh, my turn. And we've seen this so much this postseason, where teams run their first action, get a switch. It's a mismatch, and they break off everything they want to do, and you go at that mismatch, and what ends up happening is all of the off-ball players just watch, just stand. Like, you know, Clint Capela, he did some stuff on the offensive boards, but he was not really a factor.
He got three shots. He got three shots.
Non-factor.
Yeah, it was not a non-factor.
You know, John Collins was basically, all of his offense was, you know, he had to eat what he killed tonight.
And that's just not who the Hawks are. And I get it. They don't have Trae Young and things like that, but that's also wasn't who they were in game four. You know, it was the ball was moving. It was flying around and things like that. Like, that was more the surprising thing for me when I was watching the Hawks, just going like, damn, you guys just really kind of, you know, were willing to sort of just punt this one away. I know it was an uphill battle, I think, for them to try to win this, but offensively, they didn't give themselves any chances.
And also there was, I think it was maybe 4 minutes left in the first quarter when they got their first defensive rebound. That probably didn't help. But yeah.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
0% defensive rebounding percentage is suboptimal. Yeah.
You guys give the Hawks any shot? I mean, look, they won game four without Trey and really won it wire to wire pretty much. And they're not, I don't know. Bogdanovich being healthy is good. I think we all feel like Trey is probably going to try to play in game six. You know, I saw some of the film from him warming up ahead of game five, and it looked like, you know, he's still uncomfortable, especially shooting that floater going off 1 foot. I don't know how effective he's going to be, but, you know, if he's 90%, 85%, which, you know, impossible for us to know. You think the Hawks can take this to seven?
Only if Trey's 87.47%.
Yeah, that's the kind of accuracy we expect on this show. But, you know, I wonder if he can't comfortably get to his spots, you know, is he going to be able to bother the Bucks defense when they're locked in like they were in game five? Well, will they be locked in like that again? Number one. But if they are, can Trey be effective if he's not 100%?
Well, the other question, the other question is, and this is a little bit of a question we had in game three, I thought, and it was a hard one, but you know, when he rolls the ankle in the third quarter, comes back in the fourth quarter and is just clearly not right. And I mean, it's obviously a very difficult decision for a coach to make, but as you know, he comes back in and he just, they were almost unlucky that he made one of his first shots when he came back in, because then it's like, well, we can roll with him. Whereas if he misses his first two shots badly, maybe McMillan's like, yeah, he's actually hurting us out there. And just wondering if McMillan will feel the ability or have the wherewithal to kind of like, this isn't working for us. Let's go like, we'll do better a different way. Get healthy for game seven, Trey.
I think it's a bit, the big thing is the differences in that is, you know, he comes back in with what, like 4 minutes left or something like that.
But he came back, he like came back with like 8 minutes left.
Yeah. 8 minutes left. Yeah. Sorry. 8 minutes left. And things like that. I actually, defensively, he was struggling to move. And I actually thought he did all right offensively. They just missed shots. He was creating opportunities. He had a big drive to the hoop and found Bogdanović for a wide open three. Like, he was creating opportunities for others. But when you're going to have the full game, like, it'll be on McMillan to look at it in the first quarter and have to make the quick decision there. But it's hard because it goes back to when you do that, I'd almost rather, if that's a possibility, I'd almost rather you not play him at all and just let your guys go. Because then if you do that, there's a drop-off with everybody in the on the bench. Everybody just kind of like, damn. And then at home, you're going to feel the air go out with the crowd a little bit as well. Like, either just rock with your guys and go with what you got and hope you can force a game seven and Trey can go then. Or if you're gonna put him in, you have to be willing to be like, we might have to ride with this. It's not a comfortable decision. I'm glad I get to just say that on a podcast and not have to make it myself on the bench. But I think that's the scenario, that something they got to really think about. And I don't think most teams do.
Especially because the Hawks need to think about the long-term future of Trey Young and this team in particular. I think they're going to be better next year. I don't think they're likely to win the title this year, although who the hell knows at this point. You know, that could they catch the Suns?
Assumptions, Dave.
Maybe. Could they catch the Bucks?
We talked
two more
about
games?
It on the thing. Exactly. No more assumptions being made about
no
about
more assumptions
these playoffs.
Anymore.
Everything can happen. An alien could land
every
on the court.
Every single time we think we have it figured out,
the Monstars might show up. That's just be ready.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, well, guys, let's move on to the Phoenix Suns. I think that to call this a surprise would be a little bit of an understatement. Like, we thought that they would be good. I don't think any of us thought that they'd make the finals. And they have certainly had a fortuitous run. Every single time. But I want to ask you guys, hold on, let me ask the question. Are they only here because they got lucky?
No. So first of all, I'll say one last thing about the luck narrative and then we'll move on. The luck thing is we're having a little bit of fun with endpoints because it's so based on who the team is. Like, I don't think the luck narrative is coming up because Jamal Murray was hurt. I think it's coming up because LeBron was hobbled and AD got hurt. And it's like, well, okay, they were lucky this happened. They're playing LeBron and AD in the first round, having finished with the second best record in the NBA. So where does the luck start and stop there? You know, they ended up, the Lakers team that ended up playing against them was about a seventh seed team. They were the two seed. They earned that. And we took some detours to get there. But anyway, the other thing is, you look at their play over the season, they were, other than Brooklyn, Brooklyn is the only team that had a better record against kind of top 10-ish teams in the NBA than Phoenix. So they beat the best teams all year. They swept Milwaukee this year. Like they, you know, that one's just, you know, in mind because both of those games were close and one of them ended with a controversial but obvious foul that we all praised the next day on this very show. So no, they've been right there all year. And our skepticism about them had very little to do with their kind of objective quality as a team and everything to do with their inexperience. Like they're really good, but now they're basically the least experienced playoff team to reach the finals since the first Warriors title. And that's unexpected, but that was the main reason to be skeptical of them rather than anything about their team as a whole.
I'm just going to push back on the a little bit of what you said, Seth, but I agree with most of it. The luck narrative is the thing we can apply every year. That's the point. That's the thing. Like, that's what people don't understand when they're like, I can't believe this guy didn't win a championship. It's because it's freaking hard. You have to be a little bit lucky. You know, there's a luck element to all of this. Yes. You know, every team they've faced in each conference did not have their healthy top tier guy. You know, there's no arguing that, right? Like it's a different series for the Lakers if they're fully healthy. I think it's a different season for the Lakers if they were healthy all year. These guys missed 30 games. Like, I don't think really that's a seven seed in general.
Right.
The Jamal Murray thing. Listen, he got hurt. We all thought before he did, they had a chance at the finals. Kawhi goes out. It's a whole different thing. But that's not the Suns' fault. Like, in fact, if the Suns lost to any of these teams, we would be eviscerating that. We would be, I can't believe you lost to the, how could you lose to the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard? I don't care that Reggie Jackson had the series of his life. We would be killing them. And you can't have it both ways in that. You can't say it's luck and then also be on the same side of you would have been killing them if they lost. Luck plays a role in every championship. It hurts some teams and it kills some teams. I've been on some of those that had bad luck. It's just the way this thing goes. It's not.
Remind me,
it's never clean.
Were you around for not making the conference finals because Josh Smith and Corey Brewer turned into the?
No, okay. That was the year I was out. Actually think a little bit of the curse of Mo.
Yeah,
but
when Corey Brewer became Kyle Korver for a half.
Yeah. No. But I was with the Spurs the last game of the season when Manu gets hurt. And then we lose to Memphis in game seven, and Manu sat game one, or excuse me, we lost to Memphis in game six. But like there's just a bunch of that stuff. So like the luck narrative's silly. I do, and this will probably annoy Seth a little bit. I still believe the Lakers would have won that series if AD didn't hurt his groin. That's just my opinion. I think that series was going to be the Lakers, but overall, you can't fault them. They did their job. They did exactly what they're supposed to do, and everybody's got to back off.
Also, like, it's not like the Suns have lived a charmed life themselves. Like, Chris Paul could not shoot. He was missing shots. He could not physically shoot for a round and a half. And also, caught COVID during the playoffs, literally. Devin Booker has broken his face twice in this postseason. So, like, you know, it has not all been sunshine and roses. It has not been the yellow brick road laid out in front of them to reach the finals.
Is the Suns' path to the finals, is this repeatable, do you think? Like, when you look at how they built the team, because, you know, we talked a lot this year about Dallas and Atlanta in particular, because, you know, two different paths to building a team. I mean, Atlanta, it's paid off, I think, with this conference finals run. It paid off in 1 year, which is nuts. But the way that Phoenix drafted, you know, they get Devin Booker and he's at the end of the lottery. They get a number one pick and they draft a big that has just been fantastic in this playoffs. And then Mikal Bridges, which was a genius draft day trade. I mean, just what a great pickup in a wing dominated league to get that guy. This has been good drafting, great free agency. I mean, the Chris Paul trade has just been perfect for them. Is this repeatable or is this a bunch
of luck?
You left
out the Crowder. The Crowder move was a big one for them.
Oh, Crowder signing was a big one for them.
I don't know. This is, you know, this is a product of them doing the job they're supposed to do and put the team together. And some of that credit's got to go to Ryan McDonough as well, right? Like the whole thing in the early parts, a lot of credit goes to James Jones for really putting it together at the end, and Monty Williams building that culture. Even before Chris Paul got there, you could see the culture change a little bit with the team and things like that. It's a team that this is going to be there for a little bit. I think it's, they caught a little bit lightning in the bottle, which is perfectly fine. But I also think they're going to be a team that's going to be around in the West for a little bit, you know, depending on how CP plays and health wise stays with everything, and assuming he doesn't leave when he opts out this year.
This is a tough one in terms of it's repeatable, because really the key here, I think, that the thing that pushes them from, hey, they were pretty good last year and they're a frisky six seed this year, is the Chris Paul trade. And I think, I don't think I'm going out on a limb by saying that was a high risk, high reward type of move. You know, he last year in OKC was a huge bounce back year for him. He's 36 this year. He's been injury prone, especially in the postseason, and he's gotten hurt again this postseason. But that has come out, you know, that has worked out perfectly. Now, so on one hand, credit to James Jones for making that bet. On the other side, like, just because it worked this time, what does it look like next time? I think we've tended to see the one trade away for a star move backfire more often than it works. So is it repeatable? I don't know. Is this going to mean that kind of, you know, I don't know if it's a Kyle Lowry or someone like that who's kind of later in their career, if that lets them have kind of more trade value for the team that thinks we're right there, just get that one guy, get a couple first round picks for, you know, a guy in his mid 30s, which, you know, 3 years ago would have been crazy. Teams are going to try it. And because most things don't work out, it's going to fail more often than it succeeds. But I don't know if that, I don't,
right. Right. Yeah. Well, who's the next team to try it though? Like, I mean, is it Memphis?
I mean, New York probably,
I mean, you know, is it, I mean, New Orleans isn't, I mean, there, I yet, think I don't think, but it's gotta be maybe,
no, I
Dallas.
I think New Orleans is like, I think you're right that New Orleans isn't there yet. But I also think that they're somewhat likely to be the next team to try, because it's, you know, there's sort of some pressures there, shall we say.
Well, but also there's some high-end young talent there as well, right? Which is the key to this whole Suns thing is not, I mean, Chris Paul was sort of, that's the finishing touch. The key is that their core is so young and so good. And I mean, we saw it in the bubble. We saw this in the bubble. That team was playing really, really good connected basketball, and everyone just wanted to discount it. But the truth is, man, like, that team was good last year when it was healthy.
Yeah, no, that was the funny, and I think we may have even said this last year, like, their season could not have ended any better last year. Like, I think they were better off for having not made the playoffs last year, because they have this run in the bubble. They simultaneously end on a high, but also we need to get better. Like, it's possible to have that feeling when you lose as kind of a young team. Like Memphis is probably going to come out of the playoffs this year feeling, you know, pretty decent. But if they had made the 8 seed last year and gotten, you know, mollywopped by the Lakers, like
They were rocky at the end of Rocky One, right? They lost, but the moral victory was huge, and now we're seeing Rocky Two.
I want to push back on that though. Like if Memphis doesn't make the playoffs, maybe they don't have the push this year or anything like that. Like it's even Phoenix. No, it's I got a taste of it. I want more. And we see that happen with a lot of those young teams. So I don't think that's, you know, them not making, I mean, I get the idea of where we're saying the front office felt like, hey, we needed to make another push. I think they would have made those same moves if they did get to the first round and got crushed by the Lakers. Like, I think they would have.
I think we got a chance to see that out of Memphis too, by the way, missing the playoffs last year. I think that is part, like, you know, they beat the Warriors in a win or go home. And that's huge for them. And I wonder if missing the playoffs last year might have played a part in them being able to overcome that.
My point is, had they made the playoffs, they still would have had that hunger and that push because they got the taste of it, right? Like, listen, right. I worked in the league for the first couple of years with the terrible Clipper team. We never tasted the playoffs. I got a taste of the playoffs my first year at San Antonio. I'm like, oh, this is what it's like. And I'm just a stupid video guy. Like, I can only imagine on the players, and I know Seth's nodding his head at stupid more than video guy. But I can only imagine for the players in that sense of saying, like, yes, I've gotten the feel of it. It's a drug. You know, it's a feeling like once you make the playoffs and experience that run. And even though we had a bad crowd at Staples Center when we made the playoffs, it was still rocking for us. And it was like, this is cool. So I think, you know, I push back on this notion that, like, you know, they really benefited by not making the playoffs. I don't agree with that. It worked out. But I don't agree with that because I think the Suns are still making the same moves, getting Chris Paul and getting Crowder, you know, if they get crushed by the Lakers in the first round last year. And same for Memphis is still going to be fighting hard.
I do think, though, the bubble was great marketing. And maybe if you don't have that run, Chris Paul doesn't want to be traded there and Jay Crowder doesn't want to sign there. So I think that, you know, you're right, Mo, that if they had made the playoffs, maybe they still have as good of an advertisement for the league. But
if you're saying that not by just barely missing the playoffs, that it was great marketing, like would it be the same if they
make it and they get run and they just get completely run out of the
you're right, but you know the way that we do these narrative things, like Paul George got killed for his game six, when the only reason there was a game six is he went crazy in game five. So if he goes a little less crazy in game five, reputationally, is he better? Like, is that better for him? Because we're collectively stupid about these things. Yes, it might have been. But even though we only focus on the last impression.
I understand that, but I'm talking about the team itself. I don't care about the media narrative. I don't care about us on podcast and all of that stuff. That for those teams, it's a different level. Like it's not like even if they get run. I know Chris is looking at that going like, I can fix that. I can be a part of that and I can make it so that they go much further next year, you know, and all of that. So I don't like this whole, I think that's all bullshit. If you want the honest truth, guys,
tell us how you really feel. No, I think I'm making a slightly different point than you think I'm making. And this is something that ties maybe the Hawks and the Suns together is, There's a little bit, and maybe more so with the Hawks than the Suns, there's a little bit of don't know any better. Like, you kind of, this is your first taste of it. It's like, I'm here, and there hasn't been, you know, again, that first playoff experience, you get your ass kicked, and man, we got a long way to go. And it's like, no, we're right there. I have no reason to believe we're not right there because it hasn't been demonstrated to me. And so I think that's possibly a different mentality. Do you think there's anything to that, or I'm just like completely nuts? Because I do, like, there is sort of that that irrational confidence that comes from just complete lack of knowledge. And again, I might be talking more about the Hawks and Trey specifically than I am about the Suns. But I think, you know, the Suns, they showed up at the playoffs. Devin Booker's like, what? This is nothing. This is just, let me drop 40 something on you in game one.
Yeah, no, I think it works more for the Hawks than it does the Suns, in my opinion. In just a sense of like, the Hawks literally are, how many of those guys are on rookie deals still and figuring the league out, let alone making the playoffs and making this conference finals run. You know, Booker's been around, you know, in that sense. And like, I don't know if about you guys, but I had no doubt at any point when I was saying that I'm worried about the Suns team, you know, the inexperience or whatever. I had no doubt Booker was going to ball. Like, I believed in him being the balling guy. The guy I didn't expect was DeAndre Ayton. Now he might be one of those guys that falls into what you're talking about. But I think in the team perspective, the Hawks do. I don't feel that way about the Suns. Just, you know, in that sense of just at least there was a little bit more there with those guys. And I think even Dario Saric, who doesn't play a big role, but not just having been in the playoffs with Philly, but also his experience over in Europe and things like that. Like, I think all of that kind of plays that role in that level of sort of, I don't want to say toughness, but maybe just kind of experience to a degree, I think helps. And so for me, I buy it for the Hawks because this kind of came out of nowhere. But like, even when you look at the Hawks and talking about that marketing idea, they were still able to get a whole bunch of free agents and didn't even qualify to get to the bubble.
That's a fair point.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I guess, you just mentioned toughness, so it's a natural segue to talk about the Clippers, which I know is like, if I 3 months ago had said, man, mental toughness, the LA Clippers, Mo would have been jumping down my throat, but I don't know how we can watch the run they just had and not think that team was a lot tougher internally than any of us expected this season. This is not last year's Clippers, Mo, not by any stretch.
No, not at all.
To do what they did, just, I mean, without their best player and then losing the guy who, you know, Zubac really was keeping him in it in that series. And then they lost him and still were able to hang around the way they did, man. The Clippers were pretty tough. And I think that if they had been healthy, this is a completely different series. And we're probably talking about, you know, Kawhi winning another title at this point. What do you guys think about the Clippers?
No, I've kind of just decided this team was tough after they won game five in Utah. I didn't even care if they won the series. Like, you know, the news of Kawhi being hurt and everything that kind of hit them, it was all of a sudden, and you got to go to Utah and win game five. Like right after that, you know, they win that game. And it's like, okay, this team's a lot tougher than we've given them credit for. And I, you know, you can see them kind of shed that. And then, I mean, the amazing game six in that series, they could have gotten swept in this freaking series. And I still would have just been like, no, this was a great Clipper season. And how it ended, you know, it maybe didn't end quite the way we would have liked it to. but they got to the conference finals. When they look back, they're going to be able, we did this without our best player and all that. And a lot of guys clicking on all cylinders. I mean, give this team a lot of credit. And I think it really starts with Ty Lue, you know, and what he's kind of instilled in that team all year. And I think it's kind of that extension, kind of that stuff sort of rubbed off on those guys a bit. And they just a lot tougher in general. I don't know what else to say.
I think,
well, they just seem connected, man. Like they had good chemistry. And the biggest issue they had last year was the lack of chemistry. Nobody played together. It just felt like, you know, 15 guys out there often. And the difference is night and day. And I'm glad that you brought up Ty Lue, because not only was he great at coaching in this playoffs, his adjustments were
that's a controversial statement. And some people, like, there's a lot of, well, why he's so good at adjusting down 2-0. I don't agree with this, but this is a lot of, you know, if he was so good, why did he get down 2-0 in the first place? It's like,
because none of those people ever procrastinated on a paper in their lives.
But also sometimes you just lose, man. Like sometimes you make adjustments and they're small. And like you can't just say, all right, well, we lost game one. I'm throwing out sometimes the baby Luka in the bathwater.
17
you know,
straight step backs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, this is why like the day-to-day NBA coverage, I think, does a disservice to what the league actually is. Because if you're in the day-to-day, you care so much about each loss that you lose the big picture and see the, you know, this team won a lot more games than it lost this year. I wonder why. And you know, Ty Lue, I thought, did a really good job, especially given, you know, with the cards he was dealt injury-wise. I don't know how you make up for not having your best player, even though we're seeing a lot of coaches, you know, in the playoffs deal with that. I want to talk about Reggie Jackson and his post-game interview after they were eliminated, which, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit, kind of made me cry a little bit. You know, if you've ever worked in sports, I mean, if you ever coached anything, you watch a guy who, I mean, we know how veteran minimum players in the league are treated. Usually, if you're a veteran minimum once, you are for the rest of your career. I mean, I think Jeff Green is finally off the minimum contracts at this point, and that guy has been a useful player for a really long time in the NBA. And so when you see Reggie Jackson talk about his place in the league and how the Clippers kind of helped him discover or rediscover himself as a player, I don't think that you can look at the Clippers the same way. And it has colored my opinion on them. Like, I'm kind of trying to go back and say, wow, I've missed this turnaround with this locker room.
I mean, you're obviously, because of how we talk about the league, you're coming at it from like his contract, whatever. I think any of us who have played sports, been on teams, been around teams as coaches or whatever, the success of a season from in wins and losses or how far you progress isn't always, you know, linearly related to the satisfaction of that season. I think we've all been around like really talented teams that did pretty well and the season sucked. And we've been around less talented teams that didn't win but got everything they could out of and they were magical. And that's, you know, this is like a pop thing about enjoy the journey. And you could see that from Reggie Jackson talking about that's what this season meant to them. And that's pretty special. And, you know, you can't, the unfortunate thing is we can say they fixed their locker room, but next season starts all over again. And, you know, you can't rely on that sort of whatever they built, that cocoon they built this year that allowed Reggie Jackson and Nick Batum to thrive after they'd been kind of, you know, looking like they're on their way out. But so you can't count on that to be next season, but you can celebrate the fact that it was there this season. And that's, you know, we don't get to experience that too many times, no matter how long we play or around sports. So just, you know, that's worth celebrating regardless.
And this is a big thing for Clipper fans. And this is something I'm speaking directly to y'all, because I've been hard on the Clippers for past few years. If I told you at the start of the season, you would win two games in the conference finals without Kawhi Leonard, your first response would be, we made the conference finals. Like, you know, this is a big moment and good for the franchise and that stuff. It's nice to have made that leap, but Seth's also 100% correct too. Like, next year is going to be a little bit different. You're going to have to figure that stuff out. The squad, yeah, this team, you know, let's talk about it this way. I didn't like Reggie Jackson's regular season. I had questions how much he could really do and things like that. And he went to another level in the playoffs, which was amazing. And I think that's a big, thing there for the Clippers in that sense. And it is a special moment. And especially because the beatdown they took all last season, all off season, this whole way, do it in the playoffs. They did it in the playoffs. Now everybody's got to shut up for a little bit.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah. They got to run this back, right? I don't know how they can replace what Reggie Jackson brought in the playoffs. They've got his early bird rights. You feel like there's going to be a Reggie Jackson bidding war?
I personally don't think so. I think he's going to come back to the Clippers. I think, you know, I don't know if a contender is going to throw big money at him. And the way he talked about the team, I think he wants to be back. Obviously, you want to make the most money you possibly can. And I'm all for it for those guys. But I think it's kind of a good setup. The guy I think they might lose is Batum. You know, because I don't think they have the ability to sign him like they do with Reggie and have the early bird rights. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. But I also think
non-tax MLE or something like that. Yeah.
But I think teams are going to be like, ooh, Batum looks like a 3-and-D wing again, kind of, you know, but like
a 3-and-D 5. He's a 3-and-D 5. Yeah.
But he's useful. He's a guy that can help you. Right. Like, I think teams are going to see that and say, you know, hey, they'd make a run at him more than Reggie.
Listen. Utah could use one of those 4.5 guys, you know. I think they like Batum.
Again, an interesting point on Reggie Jackson. This is something like – this is part of why, you know, when you're saying the guys who get on that sort of veteran minimum thing, some of that is, I think, by choice. Like, there are a lot of those players
– sure.
Yeah, I could make $7 million a year playing for a team that's going to be a 6th seed. Or – You know what? I've made plenty of money. I'm still a veteran minimum is still a pretty nice check, in real terms. And going to work every day and doing this well is at this point in my life more important to me. And you know, none of us on the outside can make that decision for guys because there are so many different things. Like, you know, where do I want to live? What environment do I want to play in? How much money do I make? You're balancing all those things. And, you know, not to put ourselves in Reggie Jackson's head, but I think we can infer from those comments that, you know, at one point the money may have been more important to him than it is. At least at this moment, if you had to ask him like today.
It seemed like the basketball and the environment is what mattered. And look, man, I really did love that. I mean, it might be my favorite thing from this NBA season because it's easy, even for me who covers the league every day the way I do, to just forget that these guys
and are that and PJ Tucker and Juan and Durant. That was my, that those were my,
that was pretty,
yeah,
funny.
those are kind of my two sort of favorite things from this postseason so far.
Yeah. I mean, that was perfect. PJ Tucker is, you know, just kind of like a perfect human being anyway. I love that guy every second. Back to the Clippers. Okay. What do they need? I mean, obviously if they had healthy Kawhi, maybe they're in the finals, but this wasn't a perfect team anyway. I don't know how they fill the need that they have, which is, you know, they need a playmaker. This might be a team that's trying to convince Kyle Lowry to come play for cheap. Oh, I'm not sure if they've got a mechanism to make that happen, but they could use that guy. Maybe Chris Paul wants to go there.
I think.
What do you guys think? I mean, I think they're going to run this back mostly. Nobody's expecting Kawhi to opt out, right? Like, I mean, or maybe he opts out, leaving. But he's not.
I think
leaving.
So, the people who are like Kawhi to New York, Kawhi to Miami, Kawhi to Dallas, all of that. Like, he moved heaven and earth to get to LA. Like, it's. I don't understand like why he would just sort of throw that away now.
He left two of the best run franchises in the league to play for the Clippers.
Well, okay,
he's not leaving.
I think that's a bit of an unnecessary shot at the Clippers,
I mean to go play for that team. I don't mean been well run recently, but I mean to go play specifically for that team.
It could have been the
team.
Grizzlies if they were in LA. It was that was the thing. It was LA. It could
Another
have been the
team well run they were catching in LA. Strays here.
I'm just it was the city, not the team, to be honest with you.
Hey, I'll tell you what, look, if you're a team and you would like an opportunity to sign Kawhi Leonard this summer, all you have to do is relocate to San Diego. If you move your team to San Diego, I will put you as the front runner to sign Kawhi Leonard. Other than that, we're running it back next year if I'm the Clippers. And so I think that finding a guy who can initiate offense in a way that's not just isolation is going to be a big thing for them.
I don't even think it needs to be like the highest level point guard. I think it needs to, it's more of, it's an innings eater guy.
No.
Like a guy who can, all right, you know, this quarter, like Kawhi and PG can spot up a little bit because we're going to, you know, we're going to run 7 straight pick and rolls with this guy and Zubac. And like, yeah, it's not going to be the best offense in the world, but it's going to be competent. And we can, you know, we can get through 6 minutes of game action every day, just every game just by doing that. And so I don't know who that level of player is right now before he, you know, before whatever happened to him, like Jeff Teague is sort of that level, but not now. Like Jeff Teague 3 years ago is sort of that level of player. But so I don't know.
Like Dennis Schroeder?
No.
The thing is, and you guys are going to jump on me for this one, they already have the guy and it's Rondo. You know, he is going to be the minutes eater in that sense. I think coming in during the regular season off of a trade, there were flashes where it looked good, but he didn't really bring it together. I think having a full season, a full off season, a training camp, which no team had, but I think having all of that together, I think will be a bit different. I don't know how playable he'll be in the playoffs. I mean, playoff Rondo didn't really show up this year. Had moments, but not really big ones. But I think that's the guy. I don't think there are other options available to them. It's gonna have to be Rondo because I don't think they have a way to get anybody that we're talking about. You know, Jeff Teague's not gonna move the needle. I'd rather have Rondo than Jeff Teague. We're talking about tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like this is the thing, right? Like, no, but I'm agreeing with you in that, you know, I mean, like who's available
DJ
right
Augustine
now that you're looking
or
at?
Ish Smith or someone on kind of that in that sort of sphere. Like, and
you know,
yeah, I think I would want to go north of DJ Augustine, but DJ Augustine is the first guy that came to mind for me as just a guy. And by the way, it's going to be an even year. So DJ Augustine is going to be good next year.
Mercury in retrograde.
You know, I think, that, yeah. But I'm with you there. I just think, you know, getting a guy who can do that kind of stuff. And it was the theory behind Dennis Schroeder and Trez Harrell was, hey, you've got a pick and roll partnership that's going to be able to come off the bench, eat a bunch of minutes, win you some games in the regular season, but rest those legs for the playoffs. And so I wonder if they have an opportunity to do that. We're going to see a whole lot more Terrence Mann next year, I assume, because clearly that guy can go. The Clippers, I think if you felt strongly about them this year making the finals, you probably feel stronger next year as long as Kawhi's knee is
With the caveat,
you guys agree?
The West is going to be an absolute bear next year. Like, you know, you might feel better about them as a team, but it's you know, the obviously, as we've talked about, like a lot of teams have kind of fallen away, and like Golden State is going to be better next year. Memphis is going to be better next year. Phoenix is still going to be good next year. Who knows what Dallas is going to be next year? Well, Lakers will be healthy next year, we hope. So there's, you know, Utah will still be pretty good next year. Denver maybe probably takes a step back, assuming, you know, we have to assume Murray's going to be out the bulk of the season. And if he comes back, will not be as effective. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everything about that with Seth said is right on. I think that's just the way it goes. And the West is tough.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Next week, we'll be talking finals. It's amazing. Everybody have a good holiday weekend. Be safe. Please don't use any fireworks on your own. Go watch them. Let the professionals handle it. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave. This has been Nerder She Wrote on the Athletic NBA Show.